You are listening to AFL Tonight, presented by ArenaFan.com.
Thomas Curl, flyweight champion of the world!
Flyweight champion of the world.
Thomas Curl,
hey girl.
Take it to the back of the club, that fucking don't take this the wrong way. I've been peeping that ass, and if you give me my chance, I ain't gonna play. I really want to get to know you, that's what I tell you, girl, you know I don't play. I want to put it in your mouth, girl, you better do what the song say.
And welcome to AFL Tonight. I am your host, Tim Capper. Weekly look at the Arena Football League. Woohoo! Yeah, like the Riders in Montreal after winning a round one series. Yeah! Give me a Molotov cocktail. I got some burning to do. We're at midpoint of the season. Who would have thought? But with great interest, obviously, I don't think there could have been any script. Well, anybody who happens to hate Philadelphia or hate Dallas, but I don't think anybody could have written a better script than what's going to be happening this week with two undefeated teams come into, and it's going to be the national game of the week. Who would have thought? You know, all the conspiracy theorists are saying, damn it, Tim. The league's up to their shenanigans, I tell you. Shenanigans! But it's very, I mean, you have Philadelphia playing Dallas this week in Philly, Monday night, ESPN2. Basically, it is not only for undefeated bragging rights, it is for Eastern Division bragging rights. It is a one up in the head-to-head column. The league could not have asked for anything more. They couldn't have. And this is the first time in league history, if I remember correctly, where is it here? Here it is. They're calling it the Broad Street Brawl. But for the first time in AFL history, you know, we have two teams with records of 7-0 or better will meet when these two teams collide on Monday night. Now, will records head-to-head mean much? I don't know. But we'll get into that a little bit more. Just want to let you know, we are also going to be talking about this week. It was something that came up not last week, but week prior, and we didn't touch on it at all. Kimmich Baker was on the New York Dragons halftime broadcast, and he happened to bring up something that many of us fans have been wanting the league to start with. Any of you know what I'm talking about? Do any of you know what I'm talking about? Maybe that's sort of a clue. Replay, basically. Also, as usual, 8-ball, scoring average. Great high-scoring games this week. And back by popular demand. We got a lot of great feedback off this new segment. Franchise Flashback, where we will center on one specific team this week. We even have some cheesy theme music to go with it. That's okay. It's not bad. I'll let you guys decide. And the consecutive touchdown streak. We have a breaking of a record, so to speak, and we have somebody dropping out this week. Stay tuned to see who it is. Going back to what is obviously going to be the biggest thing of the year, at least so far, is Dallas, Philly. Two undefeated teams. Dallas is 7-0 and Philadelphia at 8-0. overall, these two teams are 5-3. Excuse me. Overall, these teams are, yeah, overall, the record is 5-3 in favor of Dallas. But Philadelphia is 2-2 at home versus the Desperados. Really doesn't mean much. Philadelphia's wins over the last couple of years. Last year, Dallas did sweep the series in 06. Philadelphia swept the series, so it's not really not saying right there. There are eight games. There's four games. So they, you know, there are many variables that they are pushing about this. Top scoring offense, Philadelphia Soul is averaging 66 points a game. 66 points a game. The Soul currently have scored 528 points. 528 points. That's disgusting. Then you have the top scoring defense, which is Dallas, and they're only giving up 42.7 points a game. Obviously, two quarterbacks, Graziani and Dozell, but a little bit of wrinkle into this. Graziani only played the first half last week. He may have tweaked his knee again. And he is, as the coach for Philadelphia has stated, he is day to day. Okay. So Coach Muncy is not letting anything out of the bag as of yet. Each of these teams have regular season winning streaks. Philly has 10. Dallas has 15. It's got to be something. But as we saw last year with Dallas, the Mighty they are, seem to be a perennial choker in the playoffs, no matter how good a record that they are. May not actually mean anything. But the last time that this occurred, where two teams have met undefeated so late in a season, was back in 1996, when the Anaheim Piranhas, who happened to be owned by Commish Baker at that time, who were 7-0, and Tampa Bay Storm, 6-0. Very, very low-scoring game. The final score was 34-28. If I'm not mistaken, Anaheim actually went on to lose a couple of games in a row after that. So it could be the beginning of the end, possibly, for one team. I don't know. These teams are going to meet again, obviously, in the next couple of weeks. Will be for revenge, or will be to get back on track? We'll have to see. Could be very, very interesting. But either way, I think it's going to be a game that is going to be very, very interesting, to say the least. But unfortunately, me, myself, and I am not. I just hope I'm going to be able to watch it somehow. Obviously, not getting unless they pick it up here. I really seriously doubt they will, but I won't be able to see the game. I'll have to go based on, I'll have to get somebody to tape the game for me. I'll have to do something. It's gonna be frustrating. It's really a game that I probably would want to see and be able to want to tape, but unfortunately, in this case, I may not be able to. Quit your bitching, Capper! Didn't seem to be very much, backlash this week when it came to to Mr. Censor on the ESPN broadcast. Not much complaining, so it makes me wonder if they got off their high horse and went ahead to appease not only the league or appease the FCC or whatever it is. there didn't seem to be much of the bleep button, or maybe they just got into the heads of the head coaches. But then again, the two coaches that, you know, with Chicago and, Columbus and Philadelphia, those two teams, as far as they know, the two head coaches are not really known for their swearing vocabulary, should we say? Yeah. I don't think so. but either way, it's going to be a great game this week. I hope everybody enjoys it. I hope I'm going to be able to enjoy it myself. But we will have to see. We will have to see. As I had mentioned before, a couple of weeks ago during the halftime, Kimmich Baker, not only in promoting the possible cities who are going to be hosting future arena polls, which happened to be, I think it was Chicago, Orlando, once they get the new arena, this city, that city, just happened to be London, England. London, England, again. If my streak continues for arena bowls, consecutive arena bowls attended, I have a feeling that that's going to be the year where I will not be attending. Not with the price of the euro. It would be a great game nonetheless. I know we've had some questions when it came to the history of games in England or games overseas, and we are still working on that, but it's unfortunately it won't be a game that I'll be going to. But he actually also happened to bring up replay. Now, replay is used in basketball. It is used in hockey. It is used in football, or the NFL. And Commissioner Baker is looking at the idea of having the replay system implemented for the playoffs. And the rules seem to be pretty simple when it comes to the idea of playoffs. It's something that would be discussed. It's going to be discussed at mid-season in mid-May in a meeting in New York. It would be. Let me see here. Replays would be for scoring and change of possession plays. Teams would get one challenge per half, and they lose a timeout with a failed challenge. So there's no reward as there currently is in the NFL. There's no reward for if you get you win your first challenge, you get automatically another challenge. It's not the case. I guess they want to limit it. It's sort of like what the CFL does. They do limit it, except there is a freebie in the first half, and in the second half, if you happen to lose your challenge, and you will lose the timeouts. Now remember, the timeout situation between the two leagues are actually very, very different, but it is basically the same thing nonetheless. Now I myself do see this as very positive. I mean, complaints about the refereeing, a misplay, or were they out of bounds, did they make the catch, did they cross the goal line, etc. And it does make a lot of sense for the playoffs in particular, and the reason why is that all the games for the playoffs are going to be on ESPN or ESPN2 or somewhere within the Disney network. So they will have the full contingent of cameras that are available to them. Games will be in high definition. They'll be able to, hopefully, they would be able to see more of the field to be able to get the calls right. My thought is, where are they going to keep those hood? They keep the cubicles where the referees go to. How long will they allow the referees to take in order to make this call? Will there be one centralized person like there is in the NHL that is up in a booth that can see all the plays? Is that what's going to occur? Probably when it comes to space-wise and time-wise, that might be the best idea that the league could do. But what first will it pass? I think as far as the competition committee, I think it would be in their best interest that they would do it for the playoffs. Because, as I said before, you can't really do it for any of the other regular season games because not all games are televised, and not all of them have the full cameras that they do for the playoffs or for an ESPN telecast that is done each week. So come, you know, come mid-May, I'm sure there will be a press release letting us know if they are going to be doing it. I would say that I think the possibilities of it occurring will be about 70% for. I think it's just that they need to come up with a little bit more logistics in when it comes to amount of time. Because remember, this is a league that doesn't want to waste any time. If anybody has seen some of the rules when it comes to the, you know, with NBC, they shortened their, they shortened the halftime. So it's all about time saved. How much time are they going to allow them? I think they give 90 seconds in the CFL. They give, I don't think they give that much when it comes to the NFL. I think they just want to get it right. But I think that it will be something that they're going to pass. And hopefully that it will be something that they will be able to adopt in the regular season. But the logistics, though, unless they get a national contract with the same amount of cameras each week, you know, where they have all these different regional broadcasts, I don't know if it's going to be something that's going to be able to be done. But we will see mid-May. Before we continue with the show, we do have a few bills to pay here at AFL Tonight. We will be right back after this short message.
Ever wish you can do play-by-play at an arena football game? Sure. Who hasn't? You think you got game? Maybe. Well, you got your chance, thanks to arena football sponsor Russell. They want to pass you the mic and hear what you've got. Cool. The winning call gets a trip and VIP passes to Arena Bowl 22. Plus, there's a bunch of other prizes like signed footballs and amazing Russell stuff. Where do I enter? Look for the Russell display in your favorite sporting goods store, then go to RussellPassTheMic.com to record your play-by-play. What was that site? RussellPassTheMic.com. Check it out.
I don't know. I've heard both the ads. You know, we have this ad here also. It's the Southern guy.
When you're watching the AFL, ever wish you could do the play-by-play?
I don't know which one I like more. I think each of them have their own different charm, but either way, it's a way of paying the bills. And I know we were finally able to get the other ad here. Joining us on the show. God, it's like it's a guest. But I don't know. Which one do you guys like? I've heard some bad things about Southern Boy, but it's a way to pay the bills either way. And, I don't know. Have any of you done? I haven't done it. I'm not eligible from where I'm located, so I haven't tried. I have been to the site a few times. Very interesting. Some of the calls are actually quite good. Some of them are just the original form that they had there. I really don't know if they were made up for when they launched it. You know, they keep having the same ones over and over again instead of a couple of pages, and, you know, Facebook and whatnot, but I haven't been there in a little while, and I'm waiting to see the Russell Athletics' new site. Their new website hasn't been up, and it says, you know, we're coming in March. By my watch, it is April, so what's up with that? But either way, it is a way to pay the bills, but you know, just an impromptu poll. Which ad do you like better, or do you like neither? Just let us know. You know, any feedback that you want, you can do so by heading over to the radio show page, clicking on the contact us for AFL Tonight, and sending us your feedback. Well. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the consecutive touchdown streak. Interesting changes this past week for the actual record itself. There were some slight changes, and I was very, very surprised. And there were some records broken, as I said. Through week 8, we are now down to 4. At least 4 who have over 18. If you include Bobby Scipio, we still have 5. He had 19, but he's currently in the NFL. Chris Jackson has broken the 50 barrier. 50 consecutive games with over, with one, at least one touchdown catch consecutively. So 50 consecutive games with at least one touchdown catch. That's, yeah, that was better that time around. Sia Burley, after being hurt a few weeks, is now up over 40 with 41. And with his 41st catch, 41st consecutive game with a touchdown reception, he ties touchdown Eddie Brown at 3rd overall in AFL history. Remember, Eddie Brown was the original record holder for touchdowns, consecutive games with a touchdown reception until Damien Hurrell broke the streak. Chris Jackson is now within 28. As I mentioned before, we had one person's streak stopped. And I did a double take because this receiver had been a stalwart, you know, at catching at least one. Kevin Ingram of the LA Avengers did play this week, had an interception, did not have a single reception. Did not get a touchdown reception. So his streak, which is, it's up there. I would not be surprised if it is the fifth highest in league history. Kevin Ingram's streak of 36 consecutive games with at least one touchdown reception has been broken. I did a double check when I saw the Arena Fan scorebook. I was like, what? Did a double check, you know, check participation records, etc. Did not have a single touchdown reception. So he's out of the running. Derek Lewis is still in the running. He has been on IR all this year, currently with the with the New Orleans Voodoo. And then there's Troy Bergeron, who is now at 18 after being hurt, have a couple of byes, etc., but he is currently back and seems to be turning towards 20. If Chris Jackson continues his streak, obviously he will be at 58 by the end of the year. So that will put him within 20 games. So that would be another year plus. A year and a half. Another year and a half, give or take. 16. Yeah. It'll be almost another full 2 years if he keeps it up to at least try to tie Damon for the all-time record. I couldn't believe it. His streak was snapped. You can't keep up to date with the streak. It is in the Arena Fan message boards. It is under the thread title of consecutive games of the TD, The Streak. Speaking of threads, speaking of the message boards, 8-Ball. Double eights. If you've been keeping track, you have noticed that over the course of the season, good 8-Ball has been done phenomenally. And the weaker brother was the bad 8-Ball. Well, everything got flipped on its head this week. Hold on a second here. Wrong thread, Capper. Everything got tossed on its head. whereas Good 8 Ball, who was originally tied with third with me, had a horrid 1-7. Bad 8 Ball actually had its first non-losing week. So overall, Good 8 Ball is 34-30. Bad 8 Ball is 21-43. Humans still lead. There's a tie at the top, and myself, I was 5-3. So, I wonder, is this going to be a turn of the tide, or are these, you know, after that one week where they had almost all the same choices, this is a week where everything was totally turned upside down. But keep track. Anything, you know, as I said, anything can happen. Magic 8 Ball. Magic 8 Ball. And it's funny, speaking of Magic 8 Ball, totally AFL non-related stuff. I was actually watching the original Toy Story, and Woody happened to pick up, see the Magic 8 Ball, pick it up, and goes, will Andy pick me over Buzz? And he takes it, shakes it, and he goes, outlook not so good! Maybe we should get Woody to do the picks. That's just lame. After last week's great reception to the franchise flashback, segment, we have brought it back, and we hope to be able to concentrate specifically on one team each week, and give you the, it's rather than just giving you, because I know we have so many different teams, but I think if you go through an entire history of one specific team, it's a little bit hard to do. So we went ahead and modified it a little bit, and we're going to be centering on one specific team. So that's what we're going to do. So let's get to this week's franchise flashback. Franchise flashback for this week happens to be the 1988 Chicago Bruisers. It is one of only four teams in AFL history to have a tie. And it was actually one of the first two to ever have a tie in AFL history. They were actually a team that was, you know, they were one of the better teams in early arena ball when it came to a team that could actually live up to its name and possibly knock off the Detroit Drive, who were, you know, would be probably one of the biggest dynasties in AFL history. The Bruisers ran off 10 straight wins to begin the season. Lost to LA by 28 at home. And this was after coming off a win versus LA in week 2. They beat them by 11 points at home. And then, I guess because of the amount of teams that were in the league, their last game, the last two games were versus the same team, and they played at LA. Oh my lord, I just noticed something. They played at LA and had a 37-37 tie. Now, I have seen where two teams have played each other twice in a row, but these two teams played each other three straight times. Next week in the playoffs, they played LA at home and won. So they continued their streak to play Detroit in the Arena Bowl and promptly lost to the Detroit Drive by a score of 24-13, which I think is one of the lowest scoring Arena Bowls in league history. But there were some great players on this team. Most valuable player went to Ben Bennett. Coach of the year, Perry Moss. Team did have five players on the first team All-Arena team and two players on the second team All-Arena team. I remember, stats back then were not as high as they are today. Obviously because of the least amount of games. Now sure, they played 12 games. But Ben Bennett as a quarterback only threw for 2,300 yards and only threw for 49 touchdowns. When you think about that, that's half. That's less than half than what Chris Grayson threw for last year as the all-time record holder. But Ben Bennett was the star of the team. And you look at, it just doesn't make any sense. It was a combination of things. His main receiver for the Chicago Bruisers was Carl Atkins Jr. 51 receptions, 934 yards, and 21 touchdowns on the year. And that's only in 12 games. Now, rules are a little bit different too. I'm sure strategy. Reggie Smith was their second leading receiver with 534 yards and 13 touchdowns. They were pretty much of a running machine also. They had Isaiah Lewis and Billy Stone. Each had over 140 yards rushing on the year, and they each had 5 touchdowns rushing. I mean, they had 16 touchdowns on the year. Kicking-wise, you know, just looking at the team here, I just thought what I liked about this team in particular, and sure, they were a one-loss team. They are one of the first teams to tie a game. I think first time I can see it that they played same team for 3 consecutive weeks. But it's just a team that interests me, and I hope that we'll try to get this thing. We're still, you know, a little bit of kinks within after last week's plethora of information when it came to the LA Wings and the Mexico City team. You know, this week feels there's something missing to this team. So it's like, give us a tie, give us something. But we'll try to improve how the segment goes and hopefully be able to improve it for weeks in weeks to come. So that was this week's Franchise Flashback. Scoring averages here, it's we still have, you know, after last week, it was the second highest average per week in AFL history at 117.9 points. This week, it's staying the course. They're actually outscoring these past 3 weeks points per game. They've actually, the average is actually outscoring the 2007 season and blowing away the 2006 season. This past week, 935 points were scored at an average of 116.9 points per game. That's crazy. Remember, this is the 6-week string, I think, where back in 2007, where they had the average over 110 points a game. You think with the dip that they had at the beginning of the year, and then now they're increasing it again, it can only get better. You know, the average can get larger. But even though they have done this, they're back you know, when you combine the 2 weeks through week through 8 weeks, it's only an increase of 1 point. Literally 1.0 points. So we have revisited it before. Is it because of the new rules with the new linebacker out of the box? Or is it basically staying status quo? It's very interesting though. Almost keeping pace. Not points wise, remember, there's one less team. Was one less game played, rather. But I hope you stick with us throughout the rest of the year and see how it ends up. As we were talking before, this is a very, very big week for the AFL. Culminating with the Battle of the Unbeatens on Monday between Dallas and Philadelphia on ESPN2. But, obviously, to wet your whistle, there's a little bit more of a smorgasbord available to you. It's like a buffet. The game on Monday is the dessert. But we need something. We need a little bit of appetizers, go to the main course. And hopefully, the other games this weekend will be intriguing. Now, mind you, we're not gonna have the battle of the winless teams because Kansas City shocked everybody and knocked off the Colorado Crush. Utah, on the other hand, is getting closer and closer to the record of futility. They are still winless on the season. And it just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, totally blown out by San Jose. Did not look good at all. But on Friday, we do have three games on the schedule. Kansas City at Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids is a team, as we can see, who has been, ever since putting up the 2 week span of scoring like maniacs, they really haven't been able to get back to earth. Now mind you, last week's 52 points did help, 56 the week before, but the games have been losses. Kansas City, on the other hand, finally gotten off the zero, went under their belt. Will it lead to a streak that might propel them into the playoffs? Utah, New Orleans, this game, I'll be honest with you, the San Jose game at one point was a lot closer than the 61-40 games, 40 score showed. This game between New Orleans and Utah could also be a blowout. But be careful. I really think it's going to hurt, though, is Utah having to travel across most of the country to get New Orleans to play. And we know how hostile and how dedicated the fans are in New Orleans. Chicago, Colorado. Chicago is at the halfway point with their best record ever in team history. Colorado is having problems. And obviously it's because of the loss of some of their Damon Harrell. But mind you, Quinney and Nelson have stepped up quite well. But it just doesn't seem to be working. They just cannot seem to get on track. Saturday, Cleveland Gladiators, a team who was shocked the league by starting off at 3-0, are currently in a tailspin. Except for last week's total slaughter of LA. But they go to New York, and this is a very surprising New York team as of late. Ever since Aaron Garcia has come back, the team has been able to put up the points and be able to win the games when they needed to. I mean, they were able to go into Tampa Bay last week and knock off the Storm. So this team is dangerous. Problem is, though, who's ahead of them? Two undefeated teams. Tampa Bay goes into Orlando for the war on I-4. Orlando is currently on a 6-game winning streak. Tampa Bay is currently losing their minds. I think they've lost, their last five games. Yes, they lost their last five games since starting off the season at 2-0. And it seems to be very reminiscent of what happened to the Storm last year, you know, with the losing seven straight, something that the team had never done before. So it's a game of two teams going in two different directions, and Tampa Bay needs to obviously step up, or with the way the Southern Division is, it may finally become a two-team race between Orlando and the New Orleans Voodoo. Georgia-Arizona. Georgia, even though they lost last week, they showed some promise. Arizona, on the other hand, is just not doing it at all. Yes, Arizona has their starting quarterback back. Elaine Campbell is back. Still playing quite well, but when you only score 36 points, you are not going to win very many games in the AFL. So they need to do a little bit better, but I don't know. Georgia, they too need to get back in the Southern Division. But this game could probably go either way. Probably would favor more to Georgia than anything else, but game could go either way. LA San Jose. LA cannot seem to stop anybody when it comes to scoring. Ever since Sonny Cumbie has gone down, yes, they're scoring, but their defense seems to have gone to the crapper. This game could easily be a total blowout, like the San Jose game to Utah should have been last week, or what? I mean, you lose by 21, it's still a blowout. But this game could be even worse. San Jose needs to get back into the hunt. Now, mind you, the West is very weak this year. So it is very possible that you may have a team that is close to the 500 mark making the playoffs, or at least winning the division. And finally, as we said on Monday, you do have the dessert of the week. Undefeated Dallas at undefeated Philly for Eastern supremacy. And, as I said before, the one-up in the head-to-head competition. Because these two teams will go out head-to-head once again in week number 15. Makes me wonder if they will have that as a flex game. I don't know. They've had one before. But this should be a very good game. And again, reiterate, I really hope that I'm able to watch it. I don't think I'm going to be able to, but I hope I will be able to. But we will see. We will see. Well, that's all. We've come to the end of this week's episode of AFL Tonight. I want to thank everybody who has joined us in listening. We will be back next week. Same podcast time, same podcast channel. This is Tim Capper. Watch the rebounds off the nets. I've been trying to tell you something, but you never understand. I feel like we've been going round in circles. You look at me like I've become a stranger on the street. A skeleton that's hiding in your closet. I see you next to me, but still you feel so far away. Where did we go wrong? I guess this is the part where you look at me and say goodbye.
A ArenaFan.com, the Internet's complete arena football resource.
Mission Control, 2049er, transmission concluded.